Hi, John. How are you?
Hi, Merlin.
Merlin, man.
Six minutes. John Roderick here.
I missed your voice.
Oh God, I missed yours too. I gotta make a note here. I gotta do more homework. I don't prepare. I missed you too.
I doubt that you don't prepare.
I just opened a whole new thing of index cards. I haven't written anything down for today.
Somebody asked me, does he really use index cards? And I said, does he really use index cards? He really does.
Does Stephen Hawking really need to talk like that? Is that just to get laid?
Oh, that wall in your office, which is just 10,000 index cards all taped to the wall with post-it notes and other, you know, on a whiteboard.
Some bits of string that represent different colored string that represents tinsel. Relationships.
Yeah.
Tinsel. The tinsel is very distracting.
Well, the thing is, you see it blowing through a park and you have to chase it. You have to have it.
You ever see that American Beauty movie? Remember that?
I did see it. I resisted seeing it and then had to cave because it was all anybody was talking about at the time. And having seen it, I realized I was right. But there I was.
I saw it on a date. And I remember thinking, oh, this is really, really good. And then the more I thought about it, the less I thought it was really great. And then I saw it again. And it's one of those movies I watched in college. Like, I don't want to incur the wrath here, but like some Bergman films where it seemed very important, or Kenneth Anger, like things I watched at the time. Ooh, this seems very important. And then I go back and I go, oh, that was a little silly.
Yeah. It felt like a Donnie Darko to me.
Oh, you're not a Darko?
No, but Donnie Darko I liked, but Donnie Darko didn't have Kevin Spacey in it. I find it very hard to put Kevin Spacey and a very important film in the same on the same 3x5 note card.
Oh, rewind! You're not pro Spacey.
It's not that I'm not pro Spacey. It's just that Kevin Spacey is a movie star, not an artiste.
Oh, I'm gonna write that down. That's good. Gotta come back to that.
Not an auteur.
Okay, that has an extra E at the end. Artiste, is that right?
Yeah, an extra E at the end of artiste, and actually, while you're at it, put an extra E at the end of auteur.
Auteur. Isn't that techno band that plays Power Books? That's
auteur.
Auto share. What are they called?
Auteur is a guy actually who lives up here. He's a sous chef at a restaurant I go to a lot.
I think you're thinking of that movie, Auteur, Wrath of God, which we never did round back to. Auteur.
No, you should make another note about that.
We got plenty of cards, Auteur, John.
Wrath of God.
Fresh pack of 100. No, what was the other thing then? There's another term like that confuses me. I'll have to remember it.
I see what you're saying. Auteur.
Yeah.
Auteur.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh.
You know that? You know what I'm saying?
Is that band? It's not a adult.
Auteur.
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 For a long time, weren't there a lot of bands coming out of like Iceland and Finland with funny names?
Oh, it is a band. Yeah. Well, you know, bands from Iceland and Finland always had funny names. It was just that the rest of us weren't aware of them.
Did they know they were silly?
Well, have you met many people from Iceland?
I'm starting to think it's it might be some kind of what do they call it, a collective hysteric? What's it called? Like when everybody thinks they have pox or believes in orgasms for women. Like what is the thing where it turns out that it's something that we mostly wasn't real, right?
Yeah, it's the collective unconscious all freaking us out.
Yeah, kind of like that whole tulip thing.
But Iceland does exist,
hmm.
And the people there do believe in gnomes and. They do think more than believing in gnomes, people in Iceland believe in cute, and when you meet them in real life, they have that Scandinavian like standoffishness that makes you think like, oh, these people are super deep,
right?
But then they start talking about gnomes, and you realize, oh no, they're just Scandinavian dopes.
So.
Yeah.
I might need to get some more colored thread. I got a lot. Okay, so, and it was who was it? Eric the Red? Somebody went up there and said, I'm going to fuck with everybody because I'm going to call the one that's nice icy, and I'm going to call the
one that's icy green.
And did that work? Did that really work?
It absolutely did. People, I think, you know, even when I was a kid, didn't you think Greenland sounded nice and Iceland sounded terrible?
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. Yeah. Exactly the same thing. It would be kind of like when the Dutch, the Holland people, the ones that speak...
the Hollandaise.
The Hollandaise. It's like when they named it Nice York. It used to be nice Amsterdam.
Yeah. New Amsterdam is
why'd they change it? I can't say. You got Iceland, you got Greenland. And
now we can Google it and say, oh, right, Iceland is green and Greenland is ice. But back in the old days, you were standing at the port in Manchester and you had to get on one boat.
Oh, right? And the only Wikipedia was at the Library of Alexandria, which I think burned down sometime in the 20s, 30s.
Actually, it was burned and then there was an earthquake and then it sank into the ocean.
Now, is that different from the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, or is that a Cure song?
Well, both of those things. Well, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon are actually one of the seven ancient wonders of the world.
Now, are you positive that they exist? Have you checked this? Did you fact check the hanging?
I'm pretty sure. I'm going to go on record and say that the Hanging Gardens of Babylon were real.
Okay.
The Library at Alexandria also pretty sure that it was real.
Is that where they invented calculus?
I think the Arabs invented calculus.
Hmm. I don't think you're supposed to say that.
When the library was at Alexandria, little known fact, those were Greeks actually.
Oh, and we know what they're dealing with now.
Yeah, the Greeks, they didn't invent calculus. They can't even balance their checkbook.
They think cucumbers and tomatoes is an acceptable appetizer.
Yeah. The Greeks, what, you call that a dessert? That's just some tissue paper and brown sugar.
Right. That ignores the whole concept of logos. Now, is it like hanging plants in the garden, or is the entire garden literally hanging like from ropes or colored yarn? How does the garden hang?
The Hanging Gardens of Babylon, I think, were that the entire city was, everybody had like window boxes with flowers in them.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Yeah. That sounds like the country of Dutch, where they also had the tulip hysteria. This is all very related if you have the right kind of colored yarn.
Mm-hmm. The tulip hysteria?
Oh, sure. It was the example everybody used during the .com days, right? Because suddenly everybody decided, I there's no way I could look this up anywhere, but I'm pretty sure that it cost a lot of money to get tulip bulbs. Right?
In recent times or back in the old days?
I don't remember. It was either a couple decades ago or the 1400s. It was a long time ago, and then that caused a hysteria in the same way that people wanted sites with fake money in the late 90s. And that became a giant thing.
Yeah.
That's even better. Let me get that. Market panic. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, sure. And then everybody, buys low, sells high. That's
Sure. You had to have tulips. I remember this now.
Warren Buffett must have spent years telling people it's not pronounced buffet. That must have just driven him nuts at a certain point. I would have changed that at some point.
He's been a rich man for a long time, and I think from that point on, no one ever made that mistake again.
That's right. I mean, you learn once and cut once and Bob Vila twice. He says that the key is to buy when other people are selling and sell when other people are buying. And I think that's the kind of statement that makes so much sense. A lot of people don't understand it. They think there's a trick.
It really does. It also helps to have $1 billion to buy when people are selling and $1 billion shares of stock to sell when people are buying.
You're saying you got an extra clip in the belt.
Yeah, I'm saying if you have $1,000 to invest, buying when people are selling and selling when people are buying isn't going to make you rich.
I get it.
You know,
every blackjack strategy works as long as you have a literal unlimited amount of money.
Yeah, right. I mean... So you make a 20% on your investment. Congratulations. Now you have $1,200. Get back to work. Wait for the next market swing and invest it again. Wow, 20%.
Amazing. Okay. I want to come back. Now, Alexandria also, they had a bunch of books that got lost there.
Well, yeah, the library burned and then sank into the ocean. So
because of the earthquake.
A lot of stuff got lost, yeah.
It's kind of a perfect storm for librarians. I mean, it's not just about, you know, talking loud and smudging the covers. You're saying literally did it explode first and then the earthquake? It sounds like they had a pretty rough time.
It was burned in the course of the city of Alexandria being sacked in war, which is a bad thing. to burn the library, but it's what they did, the old timey people, because they didn't appreciate that the collected wisdom of the Greeks and Latins was contained there.
And I don't want to open an old wound, John, but is there a chance, is there any chance, you're saying this is literally in Greece, and it's named after the guy who cut the knot. It's Alexandria, it's in Greece, right?
No, Alexandria is in Egypt, but it was controlled by the Greeks at the time.
This is very similar to the Iceland and Greenland problem. I think if you start naming things the wrong thing and then putting them in different countries, potentially other continents, I think that's extremely confusing.
Agreed. Well, it's named after Alexander, who at the, you know, sort of made a name for himself.
Right.
By conquering places and naming those places after himself.
And cutting a knot.
That is the definition of making a name for yourself.
He literally formed it out of letters that he found from places he had pillaged. He started with the A. Maybe he started with the X.
Alex.
Now, okay, so you got a market panic, hanging gardens. I want to get back to the cure. But I got a lot to talk about here. Now here's my question for you. Now, the Iceland and Greenland. Now, what was the band that didn't have a real language? There was a band that everybody with weblogs talked about a few years ago, and they had a name like Moo or Bonk or something. And there was a band, I think it might have had a diuresis. Am I pronouncing that right? Bonk?
Bonk, yeah, Bonk.
Is that what they were called? And they had all their songs were like, Harley Omba Longa, and it wasn't even like a language. You know who I'm talking about, right?
No one can tell if it's a real language or not. Can you tell the difference between that and Icelandic?
I cannot. And see, I think that's important. I think, I need to look into this Iceland and Greenland. Now, which one, the sugar cubes, where they're from Iceland, right?
They're from Iceland, yeah.
And they're the ones who believe in gnomes.
Absolutely. In fact, they have one as a singer in their band.
Memory serves, Einar does not like lobster.
I was talking to somebody.
Remember Einar? He was like the Flavor Flav of the sugar cubes.
I had only a tangential glimpse of the sugar cubes as they went by popular culture, because I was focused at that point in preserving grunge at the Grunge Museum here in Seattle.
Did you start there as a guard, or did you go in as a docent? Like, how does something like that work?
I was the cook. I was the cook at the Grunge Museum. And
you were the grunge cook,
and then I worked my way up to assistant manager.
What's a bill of fare look like at a grunge museum?
Scrambled eggs,
black tar heroin.
Well, so the thing is, when you're nodding off, there's nothing that smells better to you than a cold plate of greasy eggs.
Oh yeah, or maybe give you a Hagstrom. Did they play Hagstroms at all during the grunge period?
That's funny that you should say that. A Hagstrom, of course, being a Swedish Les Paul.
Would he agree with that?
Who, Hagstrom?
Oh, Les Paul, the titular Les Paul.
Oh, no.
Can you get a Hagstrom gold top? My impression was they fell apart pretty easily, but sounded
good.
That's
the thing. No, Hagstroms were made great. But that's the thing in musical instruments, right? Everybody always tries to compare the musical instrument, the shoddy musical instrument that they're manufacturing, to the good musical instrument that doesn't exist anymore.
Kind of like democratic politics.
I thought you didn't want to talk about politics.
I'm not going to discuss the Tea Party. I don't know much about Hagstroms. I always thought it
Hagstroms are great guitars, but it's like, do you remember when Kim Thayil came out and he was playing a Guild SG rather than a Gibson SG in Soundgarden? And at the time, speaking as a guitar person, it seemed like a radical and uncomfortable choice. Like, why is he playing that?
I would guess endorsement. I mean, not in a cynical way.
No. It was something he found in a junk shop. They didn't.
Kim Thayil refuses to be endorsed.
At the time, you certainly could not have been endorsed.
Okay.
If you were a grunge musician and you had a musical instrument endorsement, I don't think that would have flown very well until Kurt Cobain did his stupid Jagstang thing. But Hagstroms were great guitars. I knew a guy that had a Hagstrom.
I had a friend who's in. That's all the band would only play Hagstroms. I think the fucking Champs play Hagstroms.
They're from Florida, though.
Yeah, fucking Champs are from San Francisco. I think they play nothing but Hagstroms.
See, something has changed in the last 15 years. Now that could be a thing. Now you could have You know, like back then that couldn't be a thing.
You could have a really heavy and pointless PV bass that you played ironically. You could have an ironic bass.
You could have an ironic bass. But we were still experimenting with the technology of having female bass players in 1992.
Right.
You're not gonna be working with like super high chemical reaction matter like female bass players, and then also try and throw in some like, oh, and all we play is Hagstroms.
Right.
Like, come on.
You gotta change one factor at a time. That's science. That's right. Isn't that science?
Go slow.
You can only fit so many molecules in a building. And at the time, I think also within a few years, all the bass players were named Kim.
That's interesting that you picked that out. I'm kind of I've been talking to some people about the next iteration of the Long Winters, and I was thinking all Kims.
Wow.
Boys and girls. That's the thing.
That sounds like a Korean Smith cover band.
If your last name is Kim, you're in. Like, you can be like Paul Kim.
Like, you're Kim. It could be anywhere in your name. If your name was like Skim Boberstead, you could be in the band.
You could be Kim Kimmerstein. you have to have a Kim in your name at some point.
Al DiMeola shows up and you say, you know what? For a variety of reasons, you're not going to be in the band. The one I'm going to give you is you're not named Kim.
You don't have Kim in your
name.
Also,
you literally have no soul.
And we could, I mean, I'm willing, there are people that want to play music badly enough that they would be willing to change their name legally.
Well, there are people who get tattoos. I mean, they'll do anything. These people are desperate, John.
Yeah, we were on a train the other day talking about tattoos. And this woman, this 75-year-old woman, comes up the aisle and she says, I hear you're talking about tattoos. And did you know that I had a tattoo?
And you said, of course I do, ma'am.
And we all
I have a book here of all the elderly people with tattoos.
And she's a little old lady with like a little gray hair. She's got that wedge haircut that little old ladies have.
A minute. Do I know how this ends? How old is she?
Well, she's, you know.
Did you say 70s?
Yeah, or late 60s, early 70s.
Okay, so it's not like that kind of tattoo.
No. Well, and I looked at her too, and I was like, you don't have that kind of tattoo.
Right.
And she said, no, in 1954 or 1952 or something like that, I was living in northern Utah, and we were all shepherded down to the health center and each given a tattoo of our blood type under our arm.
What?
And she said, because they told us that it was in case the North Koreans bombed America. And I said, how old were you at the time? She said, 4.
Ugh.
I said, they gave a 4-year-old girl a tattoo? She said, they gave everyone in the town a tattoo. And I said, because the North Koreans were going to bomb? So Hodgman...
There's so many confusing things about that anecdote.
Oh, it's bonkers. But so as John is looking it up on his phone, I'm thinking, wait a minute, Northern Utah...
Yeah, is that even real? Is there even a northern part of Utah?
There is. I've been there, but I realized, oh, right, that's where the missile silos were, or it's one of the places the missile silos were. So I was like, they were bullshitting you if they said anything about the Koreans, but they were definitely preparing for a nuclear apocalypse.
I've heard of people who write their phone number on their arm in Sharpie before they drink, and I think that's smart. Or you know, so
do you think that's smart? John, I have another suggestion. Don't drink so much that you forget your phone number. That's smart.
Here we go.
So Hodgman pulls this up on his phone. Okay. And yes, in fact, it was a pilot program in like rural Indiana, northern Utah, and one other bumfuck Egypt kind of place. And they tattooed everybody in the town, including little children, with their blood type under their arms. In case after the big apocalypse, you know, people were coming into triage with their faces melted off, couldn't speak, but you could still figure out their blood type.
North Korea, did North Korea have the kind of B1 type things where could they get to us?
North Korea couldn't have thrown a basket of fruit 150 yards in 1951.
Not without permission.
But they were being funded by the Chinese, and it was the first proxy war. It was the first war between the Soviets and the Americans fought by proxy.
Before it became fashionable.
That became a real thing later.
Yeah. This strikes me as, on any number of levels, as a very duck and cover style solution, because it seems to me that whether you're 4 or aged, if you're very near a place that's going to be bombed, they're not going to be able to find that tattoo.
Sure, you would think it's a kiss your ass goodbye scenario, except that I just read a thing the other day that after they exploded the A-bomb on the Bikini Atoll,
mm-hmm.
they went obviously back to check it out, see the scorched earth situation, and numerous rats had survived.
Purely because they'd gotten like transfusions.
No, I think they survived because they are indomitable spirits.
They're hardy.
They are. They cannot. They're planning the big takeover. But anyway, if you can be on a tiny, I mean, it's one thing to be in Hiroshima and survive because they're presumably like buildings and places to hide. But if you're just a rat on a desert island and they blow up an A-bomb and you walk out of there, pretty impressive. So anyway, Northern Utah.
Yeah, well, Northern Utah, I got to learn more about that. I don't have Hodgman's phone with me. Does he still have that mustache?
Boy, does he.
Can we come back to that? I hate to keep bringing this up.
Write it on a card.
I'm writing it right now. I mean, I know you're pretty good pals with him, and it's probably not the kind of thing you bring up, but I want to come back to that. Now, here's the other thing, though. Now, if I live near a lot of, like, tall icicles, stalactites, or an unregulated abattoir, I think having a blood-related tattoo is silly but understandable. Right,
you're saying that if you lived near an unregulated abattoir, you might accidentally find your way like into the spinning knives room.
It's the same. Something? It's the same problem as generic drugs. They don't. It's not well policed. Like or herbs. You go out and buy some ginseng. You don't know what's in there. Right. That could be cat whiskers and shredded newspapers.
Never occurred to me to go out and buy some ginseng.
Well, how many abattoirs have you personally been to, and do you know whether they are well-regulated?
I've been to a couple, but they were in Morocco, and I can attest that they were not.
You're trying to tell me, as I sit here today, you're telling me that you have been in a Moroccan abattoir?
Yes.
What kind of thing do they kill in a Moroccan abattoir?
Goats.
Okay. And they got a whole system for that. And there's rotating knives in the whole nine?
No, in the Moroccan abattoir, they slit the goat's knives slit the goat's throats with knives.
First, let's just say, step zero, take away knives from all the goats.
Take away the goat's knives and slit them.
And the one in your sock.
They slit the knives in front of the goats to say, see what we can do to your knives?
Mm-hmm.
You thought you were protected.
A knife abattoir. I don't really fully understand these things. I mean, but again, blood type. I mean, of all the things that you could choose to put on there, I'm thinking, did you ever build models like Revell, like models when you were a kid?
I built so many Revell models. I still have periodically, I'll just get a flash, and sometimes I think I'm having a stroke, but I'll get a flash of the smell of the Revell modeling glue.
Mm.
It just comes out of some recess of my mind. My brain is offloading some old memory in order to retain the new memory of, you know, what the chord sequence is to Tonight You Belong to Me.
That's the strongest sense.
The smell, yeah.
Especially of glue.
I'll get this modeling glue smell. Mm-hmm. You know, and you remember for a while there, all the modeling glue smelled like lemons because I don't know what they were trying to dissuade kids from sniffing glue. I don't know why they would make it smell like lemons, though.
Right, and who amongst you that's looking for a buzz would want the refreshing smell of citrus?
No, you know? No, that's appalling. Compared to the delicious smell of modeling glue,
I love that smell.
Contained in a plastic bag and huffed.
Did you ever huff modeling glue?
I didn't, but when I was in Romania last. Glue huffing and adhesive huffing was a epidemic. And out in front of the train station, there were all these little kids, like really young kids, urchins, you know, just kind of sleeping in like little hollowed out depressions in the dirt and passing around these bags of 3M adhesive, spray adhesive. And they had these zombie looks.
This is in Romania?
That's right.
Where do you get sniffable adhesives in Romania? Is that?
Well, I mean, Romanians need to adhese things just like anybody else does.
Seems like somebody would notice. Adhere. Sure. It's transitive, intransitive. I think it's one of those things like you'd start noticing like there's just not as much, you know, oomph, you know, in the Cool Whip cans. It just seems like that would be not somebody would notice that there's a lot, you know. And where does an urchin find money for something like that? You're telling me it's an inexpensive high. It's like the air conditioning, the Freon thing.
Yeah, I mean, urchins, first of all.
Urchins are not picky about their high.
Well, urchins are not above stealing, for one.
And it's right there in the name.
Yeah, that's, well, yeah. How?
Oh, I just meant in a Dickensian sense, in a Fagin sense, not to be anti-Semitic. But I mean, the whole nature of being an urchin is you're probably not going to go out and get some extremely high-grade drugs. I mean, you don't have a car with a window to roll down.
And I'm guessing you probably don't go into the store and comparison shop. Like, you don't go in and say, I don't know, this adhesive is... I mean, you buy the cheapest thing with the money that you stole from the little old lady. Mm-hmm. And I think you get a lot of bang for your buck with a can of spray adhesive. And at least the last time I was there, your typical Romanian shopkeeper was not going to keep spray adhesives behind the counter to keep them out of the hands of kids.
Like the cough syrup problem.
The cough syrup problem.
Well, like, for example, like today, like setting aside the fact that almost everything at Walgreens is now behind the counter. Like, if I'm going to buy Neutrogena shampoo, there's a little yellow piece of cardboard that says, for your convenience, please go somewhere else to buy this. Razor blades, good luck. There's a reason I don't shave. Well, I mean, there's several reasons I don't shave, but I'm really tired of going to the counter and asking them for that. And now, you know, first of all, it's just a shame that you can't buy ephedrine anymore, because that really helped me get a lot done at one point in my life. But now you can't even get pseudoephedrine. You have to go to the pharmacist, who's probably incompetent, let's be honest, and then ask them. You have to make a case for wanting Sudafed.
You have to prove to them that you're not making crystal meth.
Absolutely. And I don't know if this is like this up in the fruitcake place you live, but here you got to show them a driver's license and they're checking that. They don't want you buying too much Sudafed. They don't want you to be completely clear. They don't want you breathing clearly.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I am not above, and in fact, often relish, screaming a lecture at people who are standing behind the counter of somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I have gone because
they often can't leave.
That's right. And they're often standing there asking me for something, and I'm yelling back at them what they need to know. And I too am not just a fan of ephedrine, but I believe it is one of the things that God made to make life on earth more bearable.
Ugh, John, this is a whole motherfucking card.
And
I don't have anybody I can talk to about this anymore.
I go into these pharmacies.
It was my secret shame.
And I'm pawing through these antihistamines, and I'm looking at the list of ingredients, and I'm like, not a single one of these ingredients is an actual antihistamine. These are like fake antihistamines, and my body is not fooled. So I go up to the counter and I say, where is the pseudoephedrine? And they say, oh, you have to fill out a card or whatever. And I rant and rave. I yell at every pharmacist that makes me go through this process. Look at me. Look at me. I want the one thing that works. It's like withholding the polio vaccine.
You whore, why aren't you helping me?
Do you know what it's like to have allergies?
You have it right back there. You can sell it.
Give me the little red pill that makes life bearable.
So you're talking about prophylactic purpose. You're saying for clear nostrils. You're not saying for twitching and writing more. You're talking about for actually clearing out your nostrils.
No, I do not misuse these drugs.
You never misused it at all?
No. I'm a drug addict.
No. I mean, before you got all that straightened out.
No. Compared to a crosstop, an ephedrine is not a very...
Crosstop, you mean like a white cross?
Yeah.
Now, what's in that? I thought a white cross
is... Amphetamine. That's actual speed.
Oh. I've had that for my condition.
Yeah, I know, for your condition. And if you take a lot of those, now you're really driving a semi-truck.
Do you have any idea how angry I could get right now? You have no idea. It's all, I could take another one of these and just be good and pissed.
Yeah.
I had to watch that with that Adderall. Boy, that Adderall will just... It'll piss you off. Yeah, but I mean...
I can't touch that stuff with... I can't look at any kind of medication and think, oh, maybe if I just took two, it would help me get this writing assignment done. Because that's a very slippery slope. For somebody,
yes, absolutely.
You know, but I do take one of those pills during allergy season. I take one of them every day, whether I wake up with a stuffy nose or not, because it is an antihistamine. It suppresses the histamine response, and then you end up not going through the agony.
No, that's why they call it a prophylactic. It's not just about intercourse with a rubber. Prophylactic, as you know. I think that's probably Greek because it's got a Y in it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're taking it in order to avoid something happening, right? Mm-hmm. That's right. That's the notion. Now, I'm almost to that point. I've got that generic Claritin. I can't tell if it makes a difference. I can't tell if it's one of those adaptogen BS things like vitamin C, but it seems to help me. All I know is that sometimes I will find myself standing in the kitchen and sneezing like for just minutes and minutes and minutes, like 16, 18 sneezes in a row.
Well, that's how you get your bacon so flavorful, right? I mean, I've always admired your bacon recipe. I just assumed it was that you sneezed on it 16 times.
If I knew the answer, I wouldn't tell you for reasons I'm sure you can understand.
I do understand.
And then the lady at my coffee place, Brown Owl Coffee. That's a
little product placement there.
Yeah, I like to place them when I can. I retweeted them this morning. Love that place. But Ariana there, she just gave me some stuff she got at Whole Foods that she claims is a Chinese herb.
Is Ariana some kind of Ukrainian like refugee or Russian bride?
I mean, you mean like a fishnet stocking maid type situation?
Well, or just an immigrant, a woman from the East.
I don't want to speak out of school, but I believe she is. Her parents are from China and Afghanistan, which is very interesting.
Wow, that's exotic.
Right now, my shrink has got me worried about the whole herb thing. Because in the same way that he's got me worried about the whole generic drug thing, he says the whole generic drug thing, he says it's, these are my words, not his, because he's a professional, complete horseshit. The thing is, it's the worst kind of horseshit because you don't know if it's horseshit.
Is this your shrink that's saying this, or is this the voice of your shrink that you're picking up in your tinfoil helmet?
Let me check my wall. Mm-hmm. Let's come back to the wall too. I want to talk more about those index cards. Okay. I got a lot of stuff here. Wouldn't help to write index cards on the index card. Boy, I really need to get something straightened out in my life, John.
Did you just write index cards on an index card?
I crossed it out. The wall / art / adhesive. Okay. The problem.
You're afraid of ginseng.
I've taken the ginseng, and my shrink he says just don't even touch that stuff because you don't know how much of anything is in there. It's totally unregulated. He says this is the problem with, especially I must say, antidepressants. Now apparently you go and take one of those name brand depressants, and it may work or not work for a person, but it can work. Now a lot of this stuff you don't know what's in there. Mm-hmm. Supposedly. And he says the problem is, this is so boring, there's no way to actually check this stuff out.
Now it's full of rodent hairs and stuff. I mean, what do you mean, what's in it? It could be just, it's just like
when you go to some yo-yo orphine? Some yo-yo says to you, yo-yo being the people who disagree with me about this, they say, no, generics are exactly the same as regular drugs. Each one of these has, like, for example, 0.01% of this active ingredient.
The other 99.9%, I see.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, now here's the thing.
Stabilizers.
And so in the absence of ephedrine and the absence of, what is it you're taking every day?
Well, pseudoephedrine. I mean, I would take an ephedrine.
Like a Sudafed type situation.
That's right. Okay.
I started on the ephedrine in college because the place that I buy my malt liquor obviously also had little bottles of ephedrine. and you could buy a bottle.
This was back in the 70s.
Close. This would be 1986, 87, 88. You could buy 50 of these little, tiny, white, unadulterated ephedrines for $2.99. Oh, a 25 milligram ephedrine. You get 50 of those for $2.99. Now, you're asking me, how do I know this? Because I'd made a spreadsheet a few years ago. Because I was getting concerned about the historical cost of dancing medicine. I call it dancing medicine. Because you can take a lot in dance or drive really far.
Do you still import these things from?
I don't need to. I have the ADD medicine now, and I don't need to self-medicate with these things.
That's nice.
Okay,
That's a happy ending.
Okay, so what? I just found out a place across the street is a handjob place. We should get back to that too.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's totally. I've had the feeling for a while, and I just got confirmation from the Merchants Association guy. Yes.
The bar where the firemen drink?
Oh, the racist fireman bar? That's changed now.
Oh.
Now it's Asian kids with funny haircuts. And it's really costly.
Sure.
But so I'll share this. I made a Google Doc a few years ago that I'm happy to share with people. Now here's the problem. You know, they made it illegal. You couldn't buy the ephedrine anymore.
Oh, I thought we were talking about hand jobs still.
I think those are still legal. I think they're, you know, it's one of those things like weed where, you know, you might as well regulate it, you know, and tax it and stuff. So everybody wins.
Well, you're telling me San Francisco taxes hand jobs?
What if they could? I don't know how well they follow this stuff. I'm just saying that a lot of nail places I'm just saying.
Fingernail places?
Like where you buy fingernails? Any place where you can go and they do things to you like a spa type situation. First of all, be very careful. There's a lot of diseases you can catch in a place like that.
Those places are caustic. I can't breathe in a salon.
Yeah, it's a very inexpensive business to start. And that's why a lot of people who came here after the Vietnam War opened them. There's a whole thing on NPR about this.
I think they also use that solution to electroplate like truck bumpers and stuff. And it's very
caustic. What does that do to a bumper when you electroplate it?
Well, it plates it. Put chrome on a bumper with.
Okay.
It's a very toxic process to chrome a bumper.
Is that right?
And that's not a euphemism.
No, well, it sounds like it. Now, that's after, let's just say for the sake of argument that some lady has sucked the chrome off your bumper. Mm-hmm. You literally go somewhere and they use electricity to replate it.
That's right.
That sounds like a racket to me, John. That sounds like a lady who's good at fellatio, and some people from Southeast Asia could easily turn that into a hell of a racket.
Oh, and then her brother is running the electroplating thing.
Sure. What about removing golf balls from garden hoses?
Constant cycle.
How did the golf ball get into the garden hose? Ask yourself that.
Mm-hmm.
Shankai Shek.
I was walking in a neighborhood not very long ago, a neighborhood that I didn't normally go to, and I saw a donut shop sort of up the street and across the way, and I was walking to this donut shop. The streets were abandoned or deserted. Not abandoned, they were still using them, but they were deserted at the time. I'm walking across the street, and here comes a car the other direction, and as I'm halfway across the street, this car slows down, and I see that it's a guy I know, and he sees me, and we kind of look at each other, but he doesn't stop. He just keeps driving, and I was like, what was he doing up here? This is a weird neighborhood for either of us to be in. Have I told you this story?
No, but I'm all go.
So I head over to the donut shop. I have a donut, whatever. A few days pass. I bump into this guy at a rock club, and I go, "Hey, how's it going?" He was like, "Hey, I saw you up there in weird neighborhood, weirdo neighborhood." And I was like, "Yeah, what were you doing up there?" And he said, "Well, I was trying to think of what you were doing up there, and then I realized there's only one reason to be in that neighborhood. And that's the $50 lunchtime hand job at the strip club that's up around the corner from there."
$50 lunchtime hand job.
And I went, I just like stone faced, like, and he said, "Oh no. Did I say that? I meant
the donuts.
I meant that you were just up there to see a friend. Anyway, good to see you. Bye."
There should be, it's like you talked about with the handkerchief codes, there should be some way to make sure we're always talking about the same thing.
Well, that's the thing. And what was terrible about this exchange was that he was so excited to have found another somebody he could share.
Well, it's like me with the dancing medicine, John. I thought we were simpatico, and now it turns out I'm fucking Elliot Smith and you're Mother Teresa or something.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I as you were talking about the $2.50 bottle of ephedrine in 1986,
$2.99,
I was able to transport myself to my 1986 self,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking, "Wow, that's a good. That sounds cool. That's a good deal."
Well,
we could get really high.
I'm not going to dwell on this because this is not interesting and it reveals way too much about me. But I did take the time, according to Google Docs, 660 days ago, to calculate. I took all my receipts for having bought these from pseudo legal places over the years because I was appalled by how expensive the ephedrine was getting. And then I did a cost calculation based on milligrams. It turns out, 1988, I was paying 6 cents, six cents for an equivalent unit. So
yeah.
Yeah, it was up to $1.46 in 2008. Can you believe that?
It's so much harder to get high now.
Why? Can I just say, I don't come from urchin people, but like I can understand the huffing. I can understand that if you're going out and you're having to go to one of these like sport supplement sites and go drop 30, in one case, what did I spend here? $59.95 for 48 count. And that's cut with guaifenesin, which is that cough medicine bullshit nobody needs.
That's more than a dollar a pill.
See, here's part of the problem, John, is they don't want you doing this huffing. And so then they add stuff. You remember in the, in the science, you know, when they add that garlic smell so the Bunsen burners stink and you can tell if they're leaking? Same deal.
It's a sulfur smell.
Is it sulfur?
I don't think they add garlic. That sounds pretty nice, but maybe. It's been a long time
since I saw more artisanal science programs.
I sniffed a Bunsen burner. But
I'd sniff a Bunsen burner. There's a time in my life I totally would have.
They've been drinking Sterno. They've been drinking hairspray. I mean, you know, there's always somebody wants to. That's why they put the nasty chemical in the rubbing alcohol. You could get shit-faced on rubbing alcohol if it didn't have that whatever the hell that stuff is they put in it, so you can't drink it.
Right. They call that Dukakis dropping. Whenever they have to add something in it, because potentially a presidential candidate's wife is abusing it. That's not funny. Anyway, the point is that the price went way up. I'm glad I got the help, and I feel bad for the urchins. Now they're not going to be able to walk up to, for a variety of reasons, the urchins are not going to walk up to a strip mall and be able to just go buy some whippets. You know, and again, you go buy the whippets, you're going to be burning through the whippets super fast, and then you're going to want more whippets. And that's costly.
I can't speak for urchins exactly, but if you're living in a hollowed out depression in the ground in front of a Romanian
station, it's not even a hole. You can't even afford a hole.
I don't think that the 35 seconds of euphoria that a whippet provides is quite enough consciousness alteration to really like smooth over the bumps in your life. Whereas if you're huffing glue all day, you're killing brain cells by the hundreds of thousands, and I think that's maybe much more comforting to them.
If I understand you correctly, you're saying there's something like a sliding scale where if you're living in, literally in a proto hole, your dreams, you're dreaming of adhesives and new and proper holes at some point. You're saying you want something really really solid that's just going to you can form to the hole.
Uh-huh. You want a high that you can count on.
Yeah,
a whippet is a high. That, like, if you're at a party in a suburban house, and there's a girl at the party that you have a crush on, and she's talking to your friend, not even flirting with him, but just talking to him, mm-hmm. and that is causing you psychic pain, just because you're a teenage kid and you think that just the fact that she's talking to him means that they're in love, and that she's never going to see you across the room. She's never going
to
love you.
How long is it taking for the person to think this? Is this in a flash?
It all happens at once. I mean, you're carrying this baggage around all the time, and it just activates.
I call it a trigger word.
A trigger site. Here's the girl. You see the girl.
Mm-hmm. And then in your head, you're going, here we go again.
If she's doing anything else, if she is making top ramen in the kitchen, you are convinced that she is in love with that top ramen and not you. Mm-hmm. A whippet is the precise dose of drugs that you need to make it through that experience. If you're living in a depression in the ground, you need a stronger dosage of altered states.
I know you're somebody who doesn't do stuff with intoxicants anymore, but A, can I just say I am learning a lot? And B, it seems to me that you have the basis for what could be something like a very disturbing almanac or possibly an unlicensed medical practice. Because it strikes me that, especially given the fact that you do tend to know what's right for people a lot of the time, it seems to me that you could, if you chose to, you put an ad in The Stranger, you put an ad in the Seattle Weekly, maybe you can leverage your reverb thing for this. It seems to me you could start finding people who have fundamental personality problems and potentially connect them up with the kind of drug-ish item and dose that would either make it better or worse, depending on what they need. Have you thought of this at all? Idea.
Well, I have long felt that psychedelic mushrooms are an underused mind alterer in terms of solving people's psychic trauma. And a lot of people don't find mushrooms either, because they think mushrooms are some kind of hippie drug, or when you eat mushrooms it makes you vomit, or they are put off by the hallucinations and put off by the fact that sometimes your friends will turn into lizards right in front of
cartoon
you.
Cartoon cats.
Yeah, cartoon cats or big, you know, bug-eyed. Whoa, you really see the reptilian behind the long pig mask. But but mushrooms in proper doses and used under correct, you know, adult supervision. can be very good for people, I think. And I don't mean like take mushrooms every day for a year. I just mean like take mushrooms once and then you think about it for a year and then you take it again and then you're probably. That's probably enough. You should be done at that point, but
right.
But with the right, it goes in conjunction with counseling. You take some mushrooms,
then you talk to your mushroom counselor. By you,
Yeah.
Would you potentially, I understand for this to scale, you're going to have to get some assistants, interns, urchins maybe, but you're saying potentially you would prescribe people something like a certain amount of mushrooms. You tell them to just buck the fuck up and take it. And then would you talk to them before, after, during? Would you be fucking with them? Would you be wearing what you've described as a long pig mask? How would you be interacting with them? Would you just be doing follow-up?
The thing, speaking as somebody who has fucked with a lot of people who were on mushrooms, I can say that it is very hard to tell in advance who is going to benefit from being fucked with while on mushrooms and who is really going to be traumatized by that.
Yeah, it's like college. So
I would tend to be very gentle with people while they were on mushrooms, unless they indicated that they really desired to be messed with.
Is that like, do they have like a safe word or a grunt, or is there something that lets you know they're ready for more of John's medicine?
Yeah, in most cases, I think safe words are good. The problem is that that most people who are taking mushrooms are in a group of people who are also all on mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So there's a tendency to forget the safe word or ignore it.
That's a good point. But it's also in the same way that like you don't let it. I mean, one of the big problems with drunk driving, apparently, is that like if you have three or four drinks, you go, you know what? I probably shouldn't drive. If you have 160 drinks, you may become imbued with the power of believing that you're the greatest driver in the world.
Right, right. You forget. Yeah.
And it just strikes me, I know that if I could just say that, I don't want to speak out of turn, it strikes me that a lot of, in addition to people not being exposed to the things you share with them, they're also getting, cross-channel noise. They're getting advice from different people. Could you potentially be in a position where you would have to argue with a theoretical cartoon cat about what's best for the person who's being fucked with?
No, I don't think so. Although... You don't want to be in a controlled laboratory environment. I mean, I don't want to be standing there in a lab coat.
No.
I think that we should be out at La Push in Washington on the coast.
Isn't that a ZZ Top song?
No. La Push is a real place here in Washington State. And you watch the whales kind of cresting there. And rather than a lab coat, I think I should probably be in a furry sweater and maybe a Cowichan hat.
I see a vest.
Sweater vest? Well, it's
not sweater vest. No, more like mamas and the papas getting on the bus, kind of like a fussy vest and like a
a yak vest.
I've seen you in a Dennis Hopper mustache,
so a yak vest and a Dennis Hopper mustache. So they feel like they're in good hands. Yeah. So they feel like there's a spiritual component to it because here's their guide. Right?
They don't just give vests to anybody.
They don't give a yak vest to anybody. And then I'd just walk them through being high, and then as they came down the other side, be like, yeah, right? Am I right? And then the next day we could talk about some of the stuff that went on, and then, you know, follow up a few times. Hmm. How are you feeling now about that? How are you feeling now about that, that you saw?
I mean, do you really care how they feel, though? I mean, or is it just, this is just part of the thing. In order for you to get the final payment, you'd have to make them feel like they're listened to.
Well, here's the problem. The thing is that drugs are not inherently bad. Drugs are just drugs. They drug you. They do things to you that are druggy. But we've demonized them, and in so doing, we've done the thing that we always do in paternalistic societies, which is that there are a certain number of people who are too stupid to live, mm-hmm. too stupid to make their own choices. And in order to protect those people from their own stupidity, we remove the option from everybody else of doing things that they're perfectly capable of doing without harming themselves, right? So there are certain kids who are too stupid.
Ah, so like nobody's allowed to build models anymore because some kid might end up with a bag on his head.
Right. Mm-hmm. And kids under 21 are not allowed to drink in bars because 7% of them would not be able to handle it, whereas 93% would be fine. You know, they'd go watch a rock show, have a beer. Nothing bad is going to happen, but that 7% ruins it for everybody. And this is the thing with drugs too. I mean, there's a certain percentage of people that use them wrong, and the great majority of vast majority of people who would use them, you know, somewhere on the sliding scale of from good to like neutral, they're prohibited from mm-hmm. using. So I feel like drugs used improperly or in excess are bad, just like television used in excess is bad, or the Bible used in excess is bad. But these things aren't inherently bad, and I think if there was, and the problem is that this is what Timothy Leary said 40 years ago. Except he was such a stoner,
he was goofy.
He absolutely squandered the opportunity he was given. And a lot of the drug gurus squandered that opportunity by becoming drug dipshits, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, I think if you're trying to help somebody on a clinical basis, it shouldn't seem too much like you're at a party and kind of confused.
Yeah, and but
it's gonna sully the real penetration of your wisdom if you're giggling a lot.
You certainly shouldn't say things like, you know, we're gonna open everybody's mind and then it's gonna be the end of war because you just sound like an asshole.
Well, that's just crazy drug talk.
But the problem is now we have this incredible. A resource of all these people like me who have used drugs and now are not on drugs. And the only way we can think of as a culture to utilize the collective wisdom of all these former drunks and drug addicts is in this, like, this recovery industry where all these brilliant people who have used drugs have to kind of secretly pretend or have to publicly pretend that, oh, that was bad.
It's camps that try to un-gay people.
Right.
Right, like you can go there and, like, you know, you can, you know, act like you don't like show tunes anymore or whatever, but that may not really stick. Like, you can keep it up for a while, but you're still going to be thinking about adhesives.
Well, except that, no, I'm not interested in doing drugs anymore, and most people...
Not you, but the people you're helping.
The people who formerly used drugs have a collective wisdom that is worth more to the population at large than it is being confined simply to talking to people who are also struggling with drugs. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I think, like, it's unsubtle. It's very unsubtle, because basically what you're saying is there's these million different things that could be problematic, and then there's one way that we've all just agreed is normal. And so it doesn't matter what's happened in the past. We're going to reroute you into this one thing, which is the normal. Well, that's part of what you're saying. I mean, it's
a little bit of what I'm saying, but there's so much paranoia about drug use on the part of normals, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for every kid who has a drug problem, who needs someone to step in and say, kid, you need to find help for your drug problem.
I think I see a better outlet.
For every kid like that, there are five kids who really should get high once.
Right.
You know? And they're so scared of what's going to happen if they get high one time, or they got high and it was bad, and there was nobody there to help them figure out what was happening, that those five kids that have never gotten high or got high and had a bad experience, they grow up to be just as big a part of the problem in America as the kid who's struggling to not die of drugs, you know? And the people that are off drugs now, and I think doing drugs should be a phase. If you are 45 years old and you are still getting high, or frankly, in my opinion, drinking yourself to sleep every night, you should stop doing those things, you know? But there's a
or try something different.
Or, well,
you're almost in a rut.
Well, this is my
point, John, is that, you know, you end up in a proto hole in a lot of ways. Like, think about the times. I don't know if you've ever, do you remember, like, in high school having to go to, like, your guidance counselor? I don't think I ever got any really great advice from my guidance counselor. There's two pieces of advice my guidance counselor gave me that have stuck with me. One of them was that I should probably join the Air Force in particular, because he'd been in the Air Force. He says,
I could have seen you in the Air Force.
Yeah.
You had the mustache. You had that blonde mustache, Air Force mustache.
It's true. It's true. And I, you know, he says you get free clothes and three squares a day. Nothing wrong with that.
Free glasses.
But I mean, this is one problem with taking your advice from a guidance counselor. The other one was that he said I should probably go to community college, because you essentially get the same education at a community college that you get as any college in America, which is in part true and in part just dangerously untrue.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Right? Here's where I try to make a point. You go to a guidance counselor who's really into community colleges in the Air Force, you're going to get a certain kind of answer.
Yeah.
His answer is, if I could make a big leap here, is not going to be like, you need to see a couple cartoon cats and then have somebody talk to you about it. So right. What I'm saying is, because of the wisdom that you have gleaned over the years, often to your detriment, you have a lot to share. It's more than like some kind of like, I'm going to go on and do my PSA to work off the sentence. There's something much more profound going on here. Which
well,
is
sure. And the difference between your dumbass Florida guidance counselor and me is that I highly recommend that you join the Air Force.
Okay.
Go to a community college, take some mushrooms, and then come talk to me. Because until you've done those three things, you're not ready. But if you have been in the Air Force, gone to community college, taken mushrooms, and you have some questions, I'm somebody that you can talk to. And that's also true if you have not joined the Air Force or gone to community college or taken mushrooms. You can come talk to me then, too.
You're like a lot like, I don't know, like a cross between a Dell, a customer support person, and like the blind guy in Kung Fu. And but I mean like plus huffing. And, right. And see, this is the, and I know you're not going to be into this, John, and I understand. This is all the more reason you should hear me out, because maybe you should be the one who's grabbing the pot with your forearms and getting heat tattoos. Mm-hmm. But
I can walk across the rice paper and leave notes.
I see that this is the thing. This is the thing, John, is I always think I could walk across the rice paper. I think I would tear the shit out of that rice paper.
Yeah. Well, you need to clip your nails.
It's not but even anyway, that. I have a very light footfall. I don't think that would be a problem at all. I don't own cowboy boots. But here's, I guess, never mind. I'm beating this point to death. I'm just saying that there are a lot of people out there that probably should be a little bit fucked up on a slightly different kind of drug. Maybe you could help people from an economic standpoint. Maybe you could help them. The thing is, you have a peculiar, truly peculiar, disturbing ability to know in your heart, whether it's right or wrong, what's fucked up about somebody. Like, and you tell them that, but it doesn't always sink in. And I'm thinking it could be because they're all fucked up on margaritas. And what you could say to them is, listen, Johnny, when you sober up, we're going to get you fucked up on something that would be much more useful to you.
Exactly.
Right? And maybe that could be some kind of like cocaine that's been cut with broken glass and Cheerios. It could be something where you take them and you get them some Scotch Guard.
A lot of people, I think, could just benefit from like sustained holding of their breath.
Oh, like, just and like maybe spin in a circle.
You know, I go to a lot of Mexican restaurants, and I look in the bar portion as I'm walking through to the restaurant portion. I look in there and I see all those gals in there with their big their icy cocktails, and I think you just need to hold your breath as long as you can, and then do it again.
You ever thought about building models?
There are so many ways to change to alter your states.
Yeah.
And every person has their own way. Like for me, I take a lot of baths. And I'm not just in the bath.
You really do. It seems like it's not even prophylactic. It seems like it's extra hygienic. Over hygienic. It's not a cleaning thing.
About cleaning. And in fact, sometimes I will eat a meatball sandwich in the bathtub, and that is not a clean process.
Do you have a tray or a sling?
I have a tray, but
you have a small table. Do you have a table? Sandwich,
there's going to be collateral damage. But it isn't about getting clean.
It's about the sandwich.
It's about getting mentally clean. Do you understand? I mean, you're in there and you are.
Hot sandwich?
It's a hot sandwich in a hot tub.
So there's timing involved. You got to make sure the water is the right temperature and you're.
I had a piece of pumpkin pie in my bath this morning, and it was exact. It was what I needed. I'm my own psychopharmacologist. I said, today your dosage is 1 hour in the bathtub, a slice of pumpkin pie, and the crossword puzzle from New York Magazine.
You're operating on a whole different level than my guidance counselor. You should be in every school in America.
Well, I've been saying that.
Yeah. I mean, could you pass a background check for something like that?
You know, here's my feeling about background checks. You go in and you just lay it on the line. You just tell them the truth.
They're not so interested as much. And what you're doing is whether you're lying about it.
Right, exactly. And they're afraid. You know, background checks date back to a time when the cultural norms were so stratified that the threat of blackmail was a real fear that people had. You know, if you were gay or if you had smoked a marijuana cigarette or if you had talked to a communist and that information came out.
You get compromised.
you could be, it could be really be used against you, because your fear of being revealed would cause you to, you know, make really bad choices, be under this person's thumb. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, no one could say anything about me in public that I haven't already said. You know, there, I have no secret that if somebody came out and said, yeah, John Roderick back in 1993, he rolled around in bed with a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they touched each other's peepees. I would
did you have a sub at the time?
I would go, that was great. It was amazing. He was a dancer. He really was. He was a dancer.
Is this a hypothetical?
No. This is 100% true.
I got two new cards.
And also...
I'm so sorry. Was that 1993?
1993. Also, okay. He was African-American and a dancer.
Two, three, four.
So, okay. And he was a very handsome guy. And I think right now he's probably working... He's probably Paula Abdul's stirrup pants advisor.
Wrangler. Is there stirrup pants Wrangler?
Because he was actually a gay person, and I was a pedestrian. I was an interloper, or a
you were just a pedestrian. You were just checking out the crosswalk.
I was a young guy, and I was like, so what's this all about? What is this? What goes on here? And somebody's going to come up to me in a trench coat and say, I know what you did. And I'm going to say, do you? Because it was, wasn't so bad.
That's not something that somebody's going to be able to come up to you and say, okay, so I know that you touched wee-wees with Paula Abdul's African-American stirrup wrangler, and therefore you have to give me $50 a month, or what? I guess you're not allowed to play benefits in Seattle anymore.
Right, or you're going to start passing us microfiche.
That's a slippery slope, John Roderick.
In a hollowed out log.
Oh. That's bad for everybody. And see, this is the problem. See, you have so much honesty to share with other people that I think, you know, you don't want to put your candle under a bushel basket. I mean, you know, and unless he's a dancer, I guess.
Well, I'll put my candle a lot of places and have, but nowadays,
yeah,
you know, I have responsibilities.
You got a bath coming up.
I do. The leaves are falling from the trees. Somebody's got to rake those. I could hire one of the guys that drives by my house every day with a in a truck with a big sign on the side that says, "We'll rake your leaves."
Wait a minute.
But I want to do that work myself because that's how I feel connected to the earth.
Ah, gosh, John, I'm connecting a lot of dots. Let's see. First of all, you were in the hand job district. There's something with a dancer, and now you're going to hire a guy to rake your leaves, except you want to take care of it yourself. Now, is that something you do in the bath?
I don't rake my leaves in the bath.
I wouldn't either. Wait a minute.
You're euphemizing what I'm saying and turning it into something dirty.
No, I'm just slicing your sub a little bit.
Oh. If I could get a decent meatball sub every time I draw a bath, if I could just like wave a magic wand.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. Now I'm euphemizing.
No, it's the magical thinking, which we never got back to. But this is the problem. This is what Buddhism tries to address. You know, it says it's okay to want the bath and okay to want the meatball sub. But it's not bad to have goals. You know, maybe you'd like to start your own leaf raking business. I don't know. Your record's not out. But just for the sake of argument, I'm saying that this is the problem, right? This is the dukkha, as they say, you know? But does $50 seem like kind of a lot for a hand job?
I mean, no. Are you kidding? That seems like a bargain price.
You're telling me this is a lunchtime special.
I'm saying that the type of guy that wants a hand job at lunch from another person.
Yes.
Who isn't just willing to go into the stall in the bathroom where he works and get a self-administered hand job.
You're talking about a leaf raker or a dance wrangler?
I'm talking about...
A professional jobier.
Yeah, I'm talking about, I'm talking about an unregulated abattoir.
Okay, but you're not talking about like the lady at the desk or something.
It's not going to be the lady at the desk. It's going to be a professional nail salon employee.
Okay.
And... That there's a certain, you know, I think that you forget because you haven't had sex since 2001.
At least.
But,
And 9/11, fuck with my balls.
Part of the appeal of having sex is the idea of taboo or the badness. You're a bad boy. You're a bad boy. And to just sit in
dirty sub.
To just sit in the stall at work and self-administer a hand job, for a lot of guys, that's enough badness. They're being bad.
Don't you see two sets of feet, though? Is that part of the badness? But somebody comes in.
Self-administering.
I understand.
And your imaginary friend.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood.
The form of your hand.
But that wouldn't count as a hand job, though, really, right?
No. That would count as masturbating.
Okay. All right.
Go and get a hand job is to take several steps toward being dirty. That in and of itself is the appeal, I think, to most guys. Mm-hmm. The hand job itself, the woman that is administering it, or the man, those are secondary. It's the steps that they take to get there and to be dirty that are the things that are really turning them on.
Does it make it less dirty if you get a discount? Because doesn't that seem like a little bit...
No, it makes it dirtier. Are you kidding? A discounted hand job? Come on, use your brain. That is dirt.
You know, my problem is, like, of all the things I've done, I've intercoursed, you know, in the past, and I've done things that are weird, but I've never, to my knowledge, compensated someone for a specific thing. You know, I've helped with the rent, or I've, you know, picked up flowers or something, but I don't think I've ever specifically gone into a place that it was intentionally built with hand jobs in mind and said, I'd be interested in this. Can you give me a little break on it today? It is lunch.
Well, except your wedding chapel, right? I mean, that's all a wedding chapel is.
Wedding job. All right, stop right there.